Okay. I want you to be thinking of your favorite worship song. Just think of one. I'll give you a second. Okay, got it? All right. I'm asking you to take a step of faith here and sing that song at the same time. Everybody. I doubt we may have a couple people sing the same song, but most people have a totally different song. So no one's going to be paying attention to you, right? Because they're thinking about their song. So I'm going to count it off. Now, you got to do this or it's not going to work. You can't just sit there and go, I'm going to listen to this guy next to me make a fool of himself. You need to make a fool of yourself, okay? All right, are you ready? Are you with me? Okay. All right, ready? One, two, sing. Okay, all right. All right, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. That's great. Uh-huh. Sounds like 1 a.m. at the Fox and Hound up here on Friday night. No, I'd... A hot toddy does sound really good right now. Okay, that was not all that beautiful. Would you agree with me? I think if we sing louder, it would fix it. Okay, you ready? Double your volume. Ready? One, two, sing. I think we need some musical accompaniment. Hold on. You think she's good? Watch this. All right, it's going to be beautiful this time. Ready? One, two, sing. Isn't that beautiful? Just a cacophony of praise. If you think that's beautiful, we need to help you. You need to respond to the invitation today, so we can have some serious intervention and prayer and maybe even exorcise a demon out of you. Here's the point of that little exercise. It's difficult. It's difficult to give your all to God when you are focused on your own thing. You chose your favorite song. Yeah, it was a silly exercise, and we sang it in a silly way, but it was very individualistic, very selfish. It's hard to really, I bet you weren't thinking about praising God during that song, were you? You're probably just saying, man, that guy next to me is loud, and they're loud, and this is silly, and you're thinking all kinds of, you're so distracted by everything else, there's no way that you are truly worshiping God in that moment. Paul talks about this in the book, the letter to the Corinthians that we're going to be looking at today. Go ahead, Dawson. We'll come back to that cymbal noise, the gong noise, in just a second. This is the definition of love that so many people are familiar with. I'd like for us to read it together. It comes from 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Verses 4 through the first part of chapter 8. And let's read it together aloud. Ready? Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. So we're starting this new series today, like I said, and it's based on this definition of love that Paul gives us in 1 Corinthians 13. Now, I've done a lot of weddings. I think every single wedding I've done involved these verses. Either I incorporated it into my message, or someone else stood up and read it, or it was printed in the worship, the wedding bulletin. It was somewhere. I've been to weddings where they use this as their theme, and they decorate the tables with these phrases and signs. It's everywhere. And you know what? It's rightfully so. It's a great definition of love when it comes to marriage, when it comes to relationships. However, there's a deeper meaning. The original meaning has nothing to do with marriage, but it is about relationships. It's not about romantic love. This is not a love song to be sung in a romantic way, but it is one of the most well-known pieces of literature in the world, one of the most beloved pieces of literature in the world, and one of the most oft-quoted pieces of literature in the whole world. So this comes from chapter 13 of Corinthians. So let's get a little context of what's going on here. You know, Paul went around starting churches, and he started the church in the city of Corinth. And at this point, when he's writing this letter, he's no longer in Corinth. He's in Ephesus. He's in a different town altogether. But he's getting reports back. It'd be like Gary Ely, who planted this church 20 years ago. He came and he started the church, and then he and Mary moved to another town to start another church. But he didn't lose contact with us, right? And he started hearing things about what was going on here, like Mary's playing a gong during the worship, you know. And he would hear things, and just like Paul heard these concerns, and so he's addressing these concerns. The letters in the New Testament are very contextual. They are specific, based on specific things going on. And we need to keep that in mind when we read the New Testament so that we don't misapply it to our lives. It does apply. It always applies. But we don't want to misapply it. So Paul hears all these bad things that's going on in this Corinthian church. Now this church is loaded with gifts and talents and skills. And they are excited and they are energetic. But there's some abuse going on. It's okay. Paul got the message that people were using electronic devices in their... So it's a very gifted church and strong, enthusiastic, but they have some serious problems. Serious problems going on. They have sexual immorality going on among them. And some of them are even kind of glorying in that. They're not ashamed of it. They're like, hey, did you hear about that? There are interpersonal relationship squabbles throughout the church. There's this newfound spiritual liberty in the women and other people, and their spiritual equality, but it's being abused and taken advantage of. Sorry. People are envious of each other's gifts. And their public meetings, their Sunday gatherings, are a debacle. It's disgraceful what's going on. They want to use all their gifts, right? So some are speaking in tongues. Others are trying to give a word of prophecy, a word of knowledge. And they're speaking over each other. And it is a chaotic mess. No one's interpreting the tongues that are being spoken. And people are walking away not encouraged and not edified. In fact, they are discouraged. Because like our private little song session where everybody chose your own song, you were not trying to encourage anybody. You were focused on what I asked you to do. Sing your favorite song. Sing it louder. Sing it louder. And the Corinthians were struggling with some of the same things. Similar things. They had their gifts. They brought their gifts. They brought their songs they wanted to sing. They brought their instruments or whatever it was. They brought their word of knowledge. And everybody is kind of fighting for position to be heard. Some of them, because they want to be seen as spiritually mature. They want to be seen as important. That's the context of what's going on in this letter to the Corinthians. Now, the immediate context of chapter 13 and this definition of love is in a three-chapter section, chapters 12, 13, and 14. Paul zeroes in on some of the things that are going on in worship. Mainly the abuse of how they're using special tongues, special languages, and their prophecies. And he zeroes in and he says, you guys, this is not about you personally. This is about the church. This is about the body. This is about encouraging one another. That's really what this is about. It's about love. You can't love and be selfish. Not really. Not true love. And Paul says, it's important for us to love always. No matter what, love always. Now at the end of chapter 12, the last sentence of chapter 12, before he goes into chapter 13, really should be included in chapter 13. He says this. He's saying, you guys are doing all these things. And then he says, but I will show you a more excellent way. There's a better way than what the way you're doing it right now. If someone walked in the middle of our little singing experiment, I think they might say, you know, there's a better way to do that than what you're doing it. And this is what Paul is saying. There's a more excellent way that I want to show you. An excellent way. So, I'll read this aloud. Follow along. This is the end of chapter 12, going into the first few verses of chapter 13. And yet, I will show you the most excellent way. If I speak in tongues of men or angels who do not have love, I am only a resounding gong, a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and I have a faith that can move mountains, that's a big faith right there. But I do not have love, I am what? I'm nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor, everything you have, you give it all away? And you give your body up to hardship so that I may boast, but if I don't have love, guess what? I gain nothing. I could be the most energetic servant of God, the most passionate servant of God, the most gifted servant of God. I could give all my money away. I could give every bit of my time, my energy, my focus, my money to the church and to hurting people in the world. But if I don't have love, if love is not behind it, it is meaningless. That's a big statement. That's huge. Meaningless. Chapter 12 also deals with, in the context of the worship gathering, he refers to the church as the body. And like a body has parts, fingers, toes, Head, shoulders, knees, and toes. We sing that a lot around my house these days. Head, shoulders, knees, and toes. Knees and toes. Come on. Head, shoulders, knees, and toes. Knees and toes. Eyes and ears and mouth and nose. Head, shoulders, knees, and toes. Knees and toes. Just like the body has all these parts, the parts need each other. Yes, they have their own roles to play, but they need each other to survive and to thrive. And the church is the same way. Yes, we're made up of individuals, and individuals have different gifts and skills and talents and passions. But we all need each other to thrive, to live, and to thrive. And this is the most excellent way, because this is must be done in love. In chapter 13, Paul introduces a word, and that doesn't introduce it. The word is agape. Now, we're very familiar with agape because we support agape child and family missions. But some of us don't even know why it's called agape. So Paul lets us know a little bit more about agape. Now, the Greeks had several words that they used to describe different types of love. I'm not going to go into all those types. The New Testament uses only three of those. This agape is one of those words. Now, agape was not a common term in secular Greek. It was there, but it wasn't used a lot. The Christians grabbed it and adapted it to their own situation and applied it to their walk of faith. So, we can read the definition of love this way, because if you look at the Greek, every time the word love is there, it's actually agape. Agape is patient. Agape is kind. Agape love does not envy. Agape love does not boast. Agape is not proud. Agape does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. Agape loves and does not delight in evil. Agape loves and rejoices with the truth. Agape love always protects. Agape always trusts. Agape always hopes. Agape always perseveres. And agape never fails. What is agape? Love, yeah, we know that. There's two kinds of agape love that I want to talk about. One is God's love. God loves with an agape love. And this is a deep, continual, abiding affection that God has for us, that we can have for God, that God and Christ have for each other. They share this agape. This deep concern, this agape love is expressed to us when the Father sends the Son to die for us. It's a sacrificing love. It's a selfless love. God is love. God is agape. I'm going to skip over to 1 John chapter 4. You've heard this before, probably. Dear friends, we could pause right there. I was surprised to learn that dear friends, some your translations may say beloved. Guess where that word comes from? Agape. Dear loved ones, let us agape one another. For agape comes from God. Everyone who agapes... Now, this is not how the Greek reads, right? I'm not going to do all the different verb forms. I'm doing the Barry version, okay? Whoever does not agape does not know God, because God is agape. And this is how God showed his agape among us. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him. This is agape love. Not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. Dear loved ones, dear agape ones, since God so loved us, we ought also to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us. And his agape love is made complete in us. So this agape love is what God demonstrates. And the greatest demonstration is him sacrificing his son for us. It is unconditional love. It is a never-ending love. But there's also the agape love that we can have for one another. Christians are to love with agape love because we belong to God and God is love. This is what we just read in 1 John. This unconditional love. This is the love that's the in spite of all kind of love. I love you in spite of dot, 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 dot. You don't say that to people. But that's the definition of it. In spite of your faults and your failures, in spite of my inconsistencies and my hypocrisies, you love me. Whatever you're like, we choose to love you. Expressed in everyday life, this means it is a deliberate commitment to love. A love in spite of love has to be a choice. It's not a feeling. Agape love is not about feeling. It's about action. It's about decision and action. It's not just emotional response. It's intelligent. We decide. It's purposeful. It's not passive. It involves making decisions that commit us to a course of action that is not dictated by our emotions. It's not a reaction kind of love. It's a first action kind of love. In spite of everything else, in spite of all the flaws, it's a decision. I decide to love. Last week, we let go of some things. If you weren't here, we talked about in the new year, we have to let go of the old. And so we have room to latch onto the new. And we wrote down some things on index cards that we needed to let go of. Some of these things were negative things, bad habits, bad relationships. But some of them were really good things that we need to let go of because we were probably putting too much trust in those good things and it was slowing us down in our pursuit of Jesus. So we wrote all these things on index cards. We tied them on a helium balloon and we had a balloon release after the worship gathering. It was cathartic. It was good to write those things down and to let it go. And what I said last week was, some of you, I'm sure, were writing down some very difficult things, emotional things, that are hard to let go of. I said, I don't know how to help you. I don't know how to let go of some of those things. Someone that you just cannot forgive. You've tried to forgive. You tried to forgive, but you can't do it. It's just, and people say, well, just let it go. I can't. Or maybe it's anxiety. I don't want to be anxious. I want to let it go, but I can't. I can't tell you how to fully let go of those things, but I can tell you. This is what I said last week. It starts with a decision. And that's all we talked about last week was that decision. I decide I'm going to let it go. Same thing with agape love. It's not based on how you feel about somebody. It's based on a decision. Because God decided to give his son for you, then we decide, we choose to love people regardless of their flaws. Regardless of how bad they get on your nerves. It's a choice. And this kind of love produces a powerful witness to the world. It's unfortunate that a lot of the world looks at Christians and they look at churches and they see the infighting. They see churches falling apart and arguing and squabbling over things, it's not an encouraging witness at all. That's not encouraging. But when we exhibit agape love for each other, it is a testimony that God is in this place, that God is love, and that we love God, and we love each other because of that. Paul ends chapter 13 with this verse. I love how Paul connects chapter 12. Of course, he didn't have chapters, right? But I love the way the transitions between chapter 12 to 13 and 13 to 14. They're beautiful. We did 12 to 13. This is 13 to 14. This is the first sentence is from the end of chapter 13. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is agape, is love. Didn't Paul just tell us he was going to show us the most excellent way at the end of chapter 12? And he does that in 13 with this definition of love. It is the most excellent way. Love is the greatest way. And he starts verse 14, chapter 14, by saying, follow the way of love. I will show you a most excellent way. Agape love is the greatest. Walk in this way. Without love, all my efforts are useless, including our singing. Without love, all your service in the church is useless, including teaching, leading prayers, preaching, leading a growth group. You could go on and on and on. Without love, it's a clanging cymbal. It's a resounding gong. Without love, ministry is meaningless. Without this agape love, my spiritual successes are senseless. Without love, all generosity of my time, talents, and energy, and money is valueless. Without love. Agape is the most excellent way. And agape always lasts. This kind of love will outlive everything else. These three remain after everything is gone. Faith, hope, and love. And hope that love will never, ever end. Love always lasts. Since love always lasts, you and I choose to always love. Love always lasts, so always love. It is the most excellent way. If religion is empty to you, if you're envious of other people's relationship with Christ, intimacy with the Holy Spirit, dependence on the Father, and you don't feel that, you don't experience it, we want to help you with that. We want you, everybody here, to have meaning in why you get up in the morning to come here. We want it to make sense. We want it to be valuable. We want you to experience the most excellent way, the love that will never, ever go away. And we want all of us to love always. How can we help you do that today? If you feel powerless, senseless, useless, meaningless, this message is for you. Jesus is for you. We are for you. And God invites us to join him on this most excellent way.